What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar. Joining me today is Senior Writer from Engadget, Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing okay. I'm doing okay because we finally have some Copilot Plus PCs. Sam has the Surface Laptop, I have the Surface Pro, and we've just started testing these things. They came in kind of late, and we're just kind of like trying to get a review as quickly as we can for both of us. But we've got some impressions here. We're going to be taking some questions from our live stream, so that's kind of the first step. Kind of a special episode for us because it's a pretty light news week. But if you join us Thursday mornings around 10:30 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel, you too can participate and ask us questions, see us show off some gadgets. We'll show off some stuff live from the Surface Pro. So if you're listening to this in audio form, go back and watch the video because you can actually see us test out some features and show off the hardware too. As always, folks, if you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's always super helpful. And drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Question for you, Sam. Mm-hmm. What was your first impression upon tearing open the Surface Laptop?
Right away, I think it's good they didn't mess with the design. The design was never the issue for the Surfaces. They're, you know, very beautifully crafted. And, you know, opening up, and this is going to sound like kind of, you know, silly, but it's like it functioned exactly like a Windows 11 laptop is supposed to.
It just works.
Yeah, it just worked. And that was like, hey, this is actually kind of an improvement from, you know, previous attempts at Windows on ARM. Right away, it seems like they, you know, Microsoft has nailed all the important aspects. Battery life so far seems very good. Performance is very smooth. You know, I'm still kind of, you know, wanting to test, you know, how far you can push it. But what Qualcomm has been saying about the Snapdragon X Elite chip, it seems a lot more believable. I have, you know, a lot more faith in this new chip than previous, you know, the HTX versions of that. And so, yeah, it seems like maybe Microsoft and Qualcomm have kind of really put it all together for, you know, this new attempt at really pushing Windows on ARM.
I kind of feel the same way, right? Like, I just got done basically doing a quick review of the Surface Pro 10 for business, which was just a straight-up chip upgrade over the Surface Pro 9 stuff. And I was reminded, I like the way the Surface Pro feels, but there are so many things that annoy me about it, like the kickstand and everything. That's all still here on the new Surface Pro, but there are a few things that make this whole experience a lot better. First of all, like, you feel that this chipset, I have the Snapdragon X Elite in mind, is just fast. It kind of feels like when I first started testing the M series MacBooks, like the MacBook Air and the first MacBook Pros that had it. Everything is fast. Everything is zippy. It boots up quickly. It certainly wakes up from sleep like almost instantly, which is nice. Battery life looks really good. And I think mostly coming, like, I feel so burned, Sam, having reviewed the Surface Pro 9 with 5G with that weird, like, the HCX.
Or even
chip.
The Surface Pro X before. That was supposed to be like a really coming out, and that thing did not deliver.
The Surface Pro X, you should go back, check out Sherlin's review of that thing. But that was like Microsoft's big design push. Like, hey, we have thinner bezels, we have a thinner machine running this ARM chip. But it was a disaster because for years, Microsoft has done a bad job of making Windows actually work well on ARM. And the chips themselves weren't that fast, too. Like, did you ever play with the Surface RT, Sam? Like, the first Surface
they
ever launched?
The original one, yeah.
I remember after the launch event, like, this seemed like a really cool idea, a kickstand, sort of hybrid tablet, laptop PC. But the Surface RT was a disaster because it ran a really limited version of Windows RT.
And the app ecosystem wasn't there at all.
There was no app ecosystem, right. It couldn't run any older apps. There was no emulation. There wasn't even emulation, I think, when the Surface Pro X launched, and then they eventually added that. But it wasn't very good. Like, even with the last Pro 9 5G, everything felt slow. Even running Chrome felt crummy. Like,
right.
You
could,
like,
feel the system crawl if you were doing something that wasn't native to ARM.
It just felt like using a bad, slow computer. And worst of all, for that computer, you also have to pay like an extra $300-$400 to get it over the typical Surface Pro. So, good news. This Surface Pro works really well. The hardware is still good. Like, I'm still kind of amazed what they can fit into, like, the size of a Surface case. Because it's a full PC, you know? It feels more impressive to me than even what Apple can do with an iPad or something, because those are, I guess now it's kind of the same because this is a mobile chip too, but just hardware wise, it still feels more impressive to me. And the thing, I think what I noticed, Sam, is like none of the AI features feel like the actual things I'm loving about this machine. It's more that it's fast, it's running all the apps I'm used to. I don't really have to deal with much incompatibility. There is some though, like you noticed,
for
what
sure.
was it, League? Doesn't launch at all?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the, you know, I play, you know, League of Legends, like, you know, with my wife pretty frequently. So that's one of the first things I tried installing. And it's really frustrating because you can go through, you can install League just fine. It installs normal, even though it's definitely not an ARM native game. And then when you try to actually play, you can't. And it's not because League itself doesn't run. It's because Riot's anti-cheat system, Vanguard, needs kernel level support. So they ask you, hey, go restart your system so it can install the Riot anti-cheat. And you restart it, and then you go play, and it tells you to restart the thing because the anti-cheat doesn't work.
They can't touch this kernel, basically.
And it's so frustrating because this is more of a, like, a sad situation for Riot than Microsoft, because they implemented the system within the last 2 or 3 months. And so, like, they implemented the system. It doesn't support the new chip architecture. And so you have a system that has enough power to run it. It should run great. And even in emulation, it should be just fine. But because of Riot's anti-cheat system, it doesn't work. And this is actually something that, you know, a lot of games with anti-cheat protocols are going to suffer from. So more of your competitive games. I think you mentioned Fortnite doesn't quite work right either.
Fortnite doesn't work at all. Like, there was a story yesterday from the Wall Street Journal that Samsung put a warning up on its website about Copilot Plus PCs that Fortnite won't even launch. But this was a known thing. Like, Fortnite does not support ARM processors on Windows because you have to run it through the Epic launcher, and it's also using anti-cheat. And it doesn't even try to launch. It's just like, hey, we don't support Windows on ARM, sorry. So that's kind of a big deal, certainly for people who play those games. That stuff can be updated, like those developers, maybe Epic will play nice with this stuff eventually. But there are also reports that some Adobe apps also don't launch. So there is still some of that. But I think, like, at least from my typical workflow, I was launching, like, most of the apps I use. Really, it's only Evernote is the one that's emulated from x86. Everything else, like Spotify, Slack, and all those.
Yep. The big apps, even, you know, Photoshop, Lightroom, those are supported. So, you know, all of your major stuff just seems to play pretty nicely. And even when it's not native, it still seems to run pretty fast.
It feels pretty good. And I did try out some of the AI features as well. The big one, of course, Recall, was recalled by Microsoft because of glaring security holes that everybody questioned them about.
And that's sort of the reason why we're kind of playing catch up on the reviews, is that they, you know, they made some changes to Recall. It's now only going to be available if you're a Windows insider, I believe is what, at least initially.
Yeah. And several weeks from now too. It's not even soon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We have not had a chance to test Recall. I did see the hands-on stuff with it and it looked fine, but that security stuff, it's like what we were talking about with Apple's intelligence, all those announcements. Like, Apple at least thought a little harder about privacy and actual concerns people would have that security professionals would have.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft just, like, totally, they were just like empty brain over here, like with a lot of these potential issues. So I did try out the co-create feature, which I'll demo on the live stream in a bit, where you can do a little doodle and then type some text and it'll make some images for you. It's fine. Like, the images aren't that great, honestly. It's not as good as, like, describing something into ChatGPT. And I'm still left with the questions, like, what the hell do I do with this thing? It's not like the Genmoji stuff that Apple is showing off where you're like, oh, you can make a fun thing based on a friend's face and, like, have a use for it. It's just like a crummy AI picture. Okay, fine.
To me, it feels like more of a bonus. And there's some weird situations where there's a new feature called Image Creator, and it's available in Paint. But if I go and look at it in Paint, I'm looking at it right now.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work for me.
It doesn't work. And then there's also like a counter, like you can only use so many prompts. And I'm seeing that go down, but I'm pressing it and like the results are weird. But the funny thing is that if you go into the Photos app, there's also a tab for Image Creator. And it works way better in the Photos app than it does in Paint, which is like, and it doesn't seem to be like there's a token limit for the version in Photos. And so it's all like, there's some weird just kind of like incongruities where you have the same thing, it's got the same name, but they work differently depending on which app you're using it in. And that's a little weird.
That's it. Clearly, like, a sign that this is all coming in hot and that Microsoft was really working on this stuff like very recently. And
to Microsoft's credit, like, there is a big, like, yellow preview tag on the button.
Sure.
So, like, yes, it's, you know, very clear that this is still, like, a, you know, work in progress.
It's just, it's a weird thing to see on, like, shipping hardware. Like, it's sort of like the Gmail beta label, which was, and Google did that for a lot of its products. Like, hey, there may be issues, but we were testing out some new stuff here. in Windows, it feels like a bit of a cop-out, I guess. I guess if it worked better, I'd have less of a problem with it. The one I really like, I don't know if you've tried live captions yet, Sam, but that is a really cool feature where once you enable it, your computer will just say, basically caption any video that's playing and in many cases translate language to English. The translation stuff is okay. It's like, it reads like bad subtitles to me.
Right.
I was playing some like anime videos and like comparing subtitles to the like incoming translation, and it was really messy at times. So it's not like a miracle product, but it is cool. It's really for people with like hearing impairments. I do think like that'll be a really
and you can often
feature.
Get just enough from those transcriptions or the translations that you can at least understand what's going on. It's not going to be super elegant, but you know you're getting the basics down. You know, mostly correct.
Yeah, so I'm working on my review of this thing. I've tried... I did one benchmark that I was able to run. I don't know if you saw the score, Sam, but can you pop over to our benchmark database? Just look at the score I put down for PC Mark 10 on this thing and tell me what you think about that.
I mean, if that's the case, I mean, that's double pretty much anything else that we've tested recently. Or maybe like, you know, not between... 50% and double the score.
The score is 12,615 points in PC Mark 10. The fastest PC I've seen this year, which was the Framework Laptop 16, which ran a really hot Ryzen chip, was 8,129. So this Surface Pro got a higher PC Mark 10 score than any laptop we've seen this year, and by a significant margin, by over 50%. That's wild. I did double check like Qualcomm's like what they were expecting from when they initially announced the Snapdragon X Elite.
Yeah, and that's pretty on target for what they were.
It's in line.
Yep.
That's insane to have that come out of this super thin laptop-tablet hybrid.
Like, those numbers are living up to the claims, because that was the big thing. Is like, Qualcomm was talking a huge game about, hey, we have these new Orion architecture. You know, we bought a company a couple years ago to like, you know, completely change how we build laptop chips for ARM. And so it's really, really good to see, hey, you know, Qualcomm kind of did it.
They totally did. What was the name of the company that they bought? Was it?
Nuvia?
I think Nuvia. Nuvia sounds right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look it up now. But yeah, that was a big deal for them because it felt like they were also really limited by what ARM was giving them. And Nuvia, I believe, also comes from some like Apple Silicon, former Apple Silicon engineer. So like some of that ingenuity that went into the A series chips and the early M series chips is also happening over here. And you can feel it. It's one of those things where it's like, as soon as you like start this thing up and start poking around, like it just feels fast. So this isn't just synthetic benchmarks like being blown up. So yeah, I'm excited by this. Yeah,
I can confirm it was Nuvia, and that acquisition was finalized back in 2021. So, you know, hasn't been that long from, you know, that acquisition to, okay, coming out with a retail product.
So early impressions, very good. Very fast, good benches. Also, I'll mention this quickly. I got the Surface Flex keyboard with this, and that's the one where you can actually remove it from the Surface Pro and still like type wirelessly, and that does alleviate some of my problems with working with the Surface Pro in general. Like, I'm so tired of having the kickstand on my lap because I have dents on my legs from testing so many surfaces, and it's uncomfortable. It's not a great typing experience. But putting the Surface on like a table,
yes,
and having the keyboard in my lap, I was doing that yesterday. It just felt like life-changing, you know, and something you can do with tablets already. Like, that's not exactly a new thing, but to have that capability like baked into the Surface, that's nice. I wish this keyboard were cheaper. I believe it's $350. So like, it is the price of the base
iPad. And that doesn't
include
the pen. If you want the pen, you're looking at like $450-ish.
So as always, this stuff is way too expensive for Microsoft, and they should just put it together. Like, especially now, because there is no tablet mode in Windows 11. Like, I was trying to like poke around to find it, and they basically just gave up on that. So it is really weird to sell a Surface as a tablet, not include a keyboard, and then be like, well, it's a full PC, right? It's a PC tablet. Except even you don't support tablet software very much or very well anymore. But anyway, my first impressions are good. Anything else you want to add about the Surface laptop, Sam?
No, I'm just, you know, really excited to see how Microsoft can take it from there, and how, you know, the big issue is that like a lot of companies, you know, weren't supporting ARM the way that it really needed to be, at least from a consumer side. So I'm really interested to see how that, like, hey, we have the hardware, we have great devices now. How are developers going to respond to supporting ARM on Windows? Because Microsoft doesn't really have that, like, ironclad thing that Apple does. It's like, hey, we are changing architectures. You do this, or we're not going to support you. And so, you know, in some ways, that makes, you know, Apple had a, you know, much cleaner transition because they have that iron hand on the ecosystem. Whereas, you know, Microsoft is a little bit, you know, less pushy when it comes to, you know, these big transitions.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Like Apple is such a, it's a tight ship that runs the software, the hardware, has a full chain, and also now the processor is like, they go wherever they want to go, and everybody has to follow them. Whereas Microsoft is like, okay, guys, are we gonna, what do you got today, ARM? You got these chips, and then
it's like, okay, who can build for this? What can we do to get you on board?
Yeah. And then, like, okay, who's going to build machines for? Oh, only Surface, only our Surface team are making chips or laptops with these systems. Okay, Windows software side, are you ready to support this? They shrug their shoulders. So, like, it is so many things have to align for this to work really well on the PC side. And I think 4 years after Apple Silicon debuted, it seems like we're there. I've also seen the reviews of the Asus Copilot Plus PC that seem to be pretty impressive. I'm hoping to get, like, yeah, one of us will get our hands on that soon. The Dell, the XPS 13, I want to see, like, how this kind of transforms how that thing works. So good news so far. Like, all signs point to this being a very good thing. I do feel kind of bad for people who bought the first batch of AI PCs from Intel and from AMD, too. I've talked to Microsoft people. They said some of these features may eventually trickle down to those systems, which has much slower MPUs, but we don't know yet. Like, stuff is in flux. Everybody gets Windows Studio FX, which is the cool background features. You may get some acceleration on older AI PCs in Adobe apps or whatever. So there is some benefit, but if you held off on buying a PC, now is the time to kind of jump in because the Copilot Plus stuff seems very good. Maybe not for like a high-end production machine yet, but for a really great ultra-portable that you can take anywhere, certainly something like the Surface Pro or Surface Laptop, it's a good sign. Let's take some questions from the audience. Hello, folks. Podcast producer Ben is here, and I'm sure you've been looking at questions, and what are people thinking about these devices?
Yeah, so hey, everybody. There are a few questions. One of the big ones from Simon B is, how do you guys feel about the reward system with the Edge browser?
Oh, I saw that question. I'm not into any of that stuff. I don't know. I've seen people get like some trinkets or something. Like Xbox has had some rewards things for a while. Bing and the Microsoft accounts have had some reward things. And it just feels like they are just bribing you to use these services. I don't care about the rewards. Have you touched them at all, Sam?
Yeah, it's like, and Google does this too. Yeah, there's like Android rewards thing that I, you know, would, and it's like, it's good if you have like, it's more of like a discipline thing where it's like, do you have like 30 seconds out of your day to go do these like very simple prompts? And then you can get, you know, some, you know, imaginary points. And then maybe in a year or two, you have enough points to like buy an app or something.
You get some free labor from kids basically and teenagers. So,
yeah. I mean, if you have the drive to like do that every day, that's cool. It's just something that like, I don't think about it unless I like, you know, open up Bing and I get the little prompt and then I'll go do it. It takes 10 seconds usually, but
it feels a bit like when I was in elementary school and saving the like little cutout things from the back of my chip bags.
Yeah, it's the internet
so
version
I could
of
get,
that.
Like,
yeah.
Absolutely.
A Chester Cheeto hat or something.
I remember I would try to cut out a serial barcode to get like a Batman Frisbee after the first Batman. Never got my Frisbee. Still sad about it to this day.
Now, one thing I do think is interesting is that both of the new Microsoft machines have fans, as far as I know, which kind of puts it in a different category in terms of like a pure MacBook Air rival, which in some ways, like I kind of respect that because if you are just like doing basic stuff, MacBook Air is great. But, you know, we've heard reports about, hey, you go outside and the sun's beating down on the laptop and the laptop
like
has no way to cool itself.
Yeah.
And so it'll shut down because it's overheating. So I'm like,
I don't mind the fan. Yeah.
Yeah. In theory, like the idea of a completely fanless machine is great because it's silent and, you know, less moving parts to worry about. But I think as like a general work machine, I think having that on there is good. So I'm, you know, That's one thing I appreciate.
I like to work outside. Yeah, like I do use, I've used the MacBook Airs all over, but certainly I think it was like last year when I went to WWDC and like you're outside and the sun is on you and like it just starts to get a little freaky. Having a little fan in there that can kick in is nice. I will tell you all, I was installing like 3 games at once, so like sucking down maybe 500 gigabytes or no, 300 to 400 gigabytes of like data all at once. And yeah, the Surface got toasty. Like the fan kicked in. It wasn't super loud, but it was like, I am working here. I'm working to get all this stuff in quickly, and it did load pretty quickly.
Remind me again, was this in the sun or
not? A bit outside and a bit inside, but basically once I got inside and was like next to my router, like it was just like sucking in data. So the SSD was doing a lot of work, the wireless chipset was doing a lot of work, and I could hear the fan. It was noticeable, but it wasn't like noisy or loud or anything. It was just like a pleasant hum. Any other questions we want to tackle?
So Dude Named Charlie said rewards for your data in relation to like reward system for Edge browser. Dom Larry said here in Australia, the Flex keyboard and pen is $7.99.
Don't do it.
Australia, no. I'm so sorry. Australia gets screwed so badly on like pricing.
Australia gets extremely screwed because everything needs to get there on a boat.
That's unfortunately it. Plus you have giant bugs and crazy wild animals. So I'm sorry, Australia. And roving bands of marauders I've seen. So, you know, at least from what the Mad Max movies
that's,
say.
Then we have like Chirag Aurora, who says, can we run Ableton? What do you think? Can we do a quick Google to see?
I'm not a music guy, so that Ableton is not something I thought of.
Yeah, released a like Ableton on ARM situation. Because I imagine that they've already done this for the M1 chips. And so would it be that?
But you gotta like rebuild for Windows. Like it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
It is a whole thing.
While you're looking that up, Mark was asking, you know, he was having issues on like, you know, couldn't install certain Game Pass games.
There is no Game Pass on these computers, because if you launch the Xbox app, it just shows you cloud streaming. That's weird. Yeah.
And so you got to look at two things. Like, you know, like the game streaming works just fine. And then if you download games from like the Windows Store, it looks like Microsoft, from what I can tell, is doing a better job of labeling which games are and are not supported. Unfortunately, a lot of them are not, but you know, you will go in and you will see some games that are. So that's one thing I want to dive into more and see, like, you know, what's the percentage of like games that like, hey, work fine, or just don't run at all.
I was thinking they were just blocking entirely, because when I launch the Xbox app, that's normally where I go to look at Game Pass releases. There's no Game Pass section at all on these systems. It's just cloud streaming. But if you go through the store, yeah, you should technically
right,
be able to get
the games. The general Microsoft store. You get a little bit different information.
I did. So I installed Steam and I got a couple games going. I have not been able to play anything yet, but I did run 3D Mark a couple of times. And actually, I have the stats on that too. And 3D Mark, like, it's fine. It's better than the Intel Xe stuff has been. Running 3D Mark Wildlife Extreme, I got a score of 6,430, which was on par with the HP Spectre X360 16, a 16-inch computer, so it was faster than that one. Faster than a lot of like the Intel Arc graphics we've seen this year. Certainly not as fast as like, you know, NVIDIA stuff, but impressive for a system of this size and this slim. Yeah.
Jonathan Anderson says, let me know when this silly Game Pass thing comes to Nintendo. Until then, Zelda.
We'll get to that,
actually. And Simon B. has another question, which is there cloud streaming that's any good from Microsoft?
Yeah, literally the Xbox cloud streaming, which I think some of the best cloud streaming, to be honest.
And so this almost makes you wonder, like, is this part of Microsoft's strategy? Because, hey, they've been pushing, you know, cloud streaming for a long time, you know, the cloud streaming works just fine. And so maybe like this is their solution to like, hey, you want a game? If you pay us a little bit extra money, you can play all your games in the cloud.
That's been part of the pitch for a while, but I don't think, because there have been reports that the cloud network has also been like slow to launch and stuff for people. So maybe they don't want it to get too popular. But yeah, like the ability to just like sit down and play a game on any laptop as long as you can log into a web browser is fantastic and is a good thing with a system like this where you don't want all that hardware maybe inside your laptop, but you have good internet and you want to play some games. I could see that being a thing. Yeah.
Lord Buckethead asks, does Doom run? Well, if you can stream it, then yes, of course Doom runs.
Anything can run. If you stream it, anything is possible. That's how this works.
You'll be able to play the new Doom, what is the...
The Middle
Doom
Ages.
Primeval, yeah. Doom. The Dark Ages.
What a good title. Quick thing on this Surface. This is the first Surface with an OLED screen, and the screen looks fantastic. And the speakers are very good, too. So, like, I've been using this as sort of, like, I just want to do a little writing. I'm going to go to bed, like, just lay down in bed, rest my back a little, but I can still, like, watch stuff. The speakers are surprisingly good, so... Yeah, I think overall I'm feeling like good.
The hardware generally has been, you know, top notch from what I can tell.
I think that's it that we have for questions today. But you know what, folks? I always want to like answer this stuff. So you can drop us an email at podcast@gadget.com. I'm in the middle of my review. Sam's still working on his. But we definitely want to answer your questions. So send us some and we can answer them in the next episode. All right, let's move on from all this Surface stuff. There was a Nintendo Direct this week, which I think came as kind of a surprise. We didn't get much of a heads up that was happening. But a few things we want to call out. New Zelda with starring Zelda. That's good. The Legend of Zelda, Echoes of Wisdom. How do you feel about this, Sam? Because I've been waiting for this game for a long time.
I'm incredibly excited. So it has it's kind of similar art style that they used for the Link's Awakening remake, which is great, absolutely adored. I think it looks incredible.
Yeah.
And then obviously starring Zelda, where she's the main protagonist. Link gets kind of disappeared right in the beginning. And that's fine. It's like, I think everybody has been really interested in see like, The series of the franchise is Legend of Zelda, and it's been how many years until she gets to like really take center stage?
Every non-gamer, every parent has been like, "Oh, you're Zelda, right? That little guy running around, that's Zelda. It's right. The Legend of Zelda."
No. And then on top of that, like the idea that like she just she doesn't use a sword. She has this new Echoes ability where she can basically capture like the essence of like inanimate objects, like chairs, beds, whatever, but also enemies. Really. It brings a really interesting twist on the traditional like Zelda game style. I do wish they gave her just like a regular weapon. I don't think it has to be a sword, but like I kind of want to just see Zelda run around and bonk people on the head with like a giant hammer or something.
Maybe we'll get something like that. It does have a weird sense.
You know, we've only seen a little bit from like the teasers and the preview. So like, you know, hopefully she has her wand that makes echoes, and then you know she gets a little bit of melee action in there too.
I'm kind of like. I think a bad interpretation of this is like it's almost like they're saying, "Oh, girls can't use swords, right?" Of course, a girl can use a sword, and reminds me of comments from the Shadow of Colossus creator, who I love his games, but he did say something weird at some point. It was like, "Oh yeah, girls can't go on adventures like that. That's why his games are typically about young boys trying to save people." That's bad faith. I'd say here, it's what's interesting is that it is a really interesting mechanic. And we've also seen Zelda in some games be kick-ass. So, you know, she's been a kick-ass warrior in some games.
And I'm not sure if, like, the lore lines up, but, like, if we're going to see if, like, we get an appearance from Sheik, which was, like, remember, Zelda had, it transforms into Sheik, and she was, like, kind of a mysterious character.
She was a ninja, basically.
Yeah, and so I think, if they can incorporate that in some way, that way Zelda gets some, like, melee abilities on top of her magic stuff, I think that would be really cool, but we'll have to wait to see how the game plays out.
Yeah, I'm glad it's not just melee, because then it would feel like a palette swap too, of just like, oh, it's another character hopping around doing Zelda puzzles. Like, this seems like a fundamental rethinking of how this universe can work in the same way that Breath of the Wild was and Tears of the Kingdom was. So, gotta love it. Gotta love the people developing.
I was going to say, and someone who, like, Link to the Past is one of my favorite games of all time. So I love that they're, still continuing on with, like, the top-down, quote-unquote 2D Zelda games.
I love it, too. I need the art, though. I need the sprites. I need me some sprites. Like, as much as I like this, little, like, cutesy 3D art style, but it doesn't hit in the same way. When I scroll TikTok, I often see people playing, like, older Zelda games. I'm like, it feels good. And we don't get a lot of that from Nintendo. We do get it from other companies trying to be Zelda-like. So, that's a thing. So this game looks cool. The other thing that was really interesting is they finally, like, fully showed us Metroid Prime. It's called Metroid Prime 4. It has been years since they first announced this thing.
I think it was 2017 when they first announced that they were working on it.
And in 2019, they also announced a complete do-over. Like, they were stopping development of that version of Metroid Prime 4 and starting it over. So now here we are. It's 2024, and this game is coming next year. They say for the Switch, but it's like, okay, or whatever else Nintendo has next year, right? Like, this is a lot of this is prep for software for next year for their new system.
I was gonna say, like, it's kind of interesting how they're setting up for, like, this is kind of like the end of the Switch's, like, era, and then whatever the Switch 2 or whatever, you know, they call it. You know, we'll see. I'm curious to see how, you know, what kind of support these games get in terms of, like, will they be fully supported? Will they be launch titles for a new Nintendo system?
They're going to carry the store over. Like, the Switch has been so successful. They can't do another, oh, this is a weird one-off store and all the stuff you bought may die in a couple of years or something. Like, the Switch is forever. Yeah.
And I actually think this is, like, this is something that, like, Nintendo has a really big opportunity with. If you look at, like, with the Switch, they switched, moved over to an ARM-based chip. And so I'm really curious to see, like, what the continuity will be for this next system. Will it also be ARM? I really hope so.
Because they better, yeah.
It's like, it has, like, really big implications on, like, hey, is it easier to port older games over to the new title? Does this, you know, there's been rumors that the new device will support, game cartridges from the Switch and stuff like that. And then on top of that, like, you know, bringing back a lot of the virtual, you know, quote unquote, virtual console titles where, hey, we're having classics on the store and they run on the Switch and they run on the new machine too. So you get to carry over your library as well too. And I think that's a really big thing that, you know, they could capitalize on with whatever the replaces the Switch.
There's no reason to do an architecture change. Like, I'm just, like, looking at this on a strategic level. Like, they've done so much work to build emulators for the Switch itself. Like, that stuff will directly carry over to another ARM system. There was also, like, not, I don't, what else would they go with? There's really nothing, like, PC hardware with an AMD.
I mean, like, yeah, if they go back to PowerPC, people will just go, like, you know, quake in their seats, but yeah.
It's not, so yeah, I fully expect them to stick with, like, ARM, and looking at, like, what ARM is doing now, like, maybe relying on some good stuff. And also, yeah, probably working together with NVIDIA again, because nobody else really used the Tegra chipset. I think the Zune HD had the Tegra, which I really liked. But, you know, that is just kind of like dead hardware. I do think a lot of these games will just work across both systems. Like, you wouldn't want people buying new games this year and by next year, like, they just won't work. Did anything else jump out at you from these announcements, Sam?
Yeah, I thought you're going to get a new Mario and Luigi game. It's called Brothership, which I think is actually sounds really fun, but also could be, like, some sort of, like, you know, hidden pun, because it was, like, in the teaser, it showed that I'm, like, you know, traveling around the world, maybe on a boat. So, hey, this is going to be cool. Like, Mario and Luigi captain a boat together. That could be fun.
Mm-hmm. The art style is, like, almost a little cel-shaded, too.
Yep.
Looks a little different, yeah.
I'm always a sucker for a new Mario Party game, because you get one, like, every 5 years at most. And so there's going to be a new Mario Party game called Mario Party Jamboree. And it's sad because, like, I bought the last one and I played it, like, a bunch when it first came out. And then, like, I had a kid and I had no one to play it with because I didn't anything that wasn't kid-related.
And also, you don't have people over to play Mario Party games.
Yes, and so...
And also, we had a pandemic, you know. That's the whole thing.
So, I'm excited for Mario Party Jamboree, even though I may have aged out of it, annoyingly.
Well, and maybe then, you're aging back into it, though. Like, my daughter is now 5, and she's, like, big on Minecraft and some games. So, this is a good entry point. She also watches me play RPGs, so she likes the games, yeah.
You were talking about sprites.
Give me
sprites.
There's
going to be a Dragon Warrior 3 HD 2D remake. And so, I mean, I love the way that thing looks because it does kind of capture more of that, like, you know, sprite-inspired, graphical quality. And as someone who's, like, always appreciated Dragon Warrior but has never, like, dived into it the way that, like, you know, I played every Final Fantasy game, this seems like a really good place to, like, jump on because it's, like, chronologically, it's the first of, like, the, you know, Dragon Warrior trilogy games. So it'll be really interesting. It's, like, you know, modern graphic style, but, you know, with a more of a classic turn-based RPG feeling, which is always, you know, right up my alley.
This looks really cool. I do like, at least HD 2D gets us some sprites, like, alongside 3D engine stuff. But then I'm, like, playing Hades 2, and it's just like, oh, look at this glorious artwork. Look at this. There's still some 3D work in there, but it's just mostly beautiful illustrations. I don't know. Anything else from this, Sam?
No, that was about it. You know, there was a ton of stuff. There's a new Metal Slug game that was like a some sort of like weird tower defense game.
Is it tower defense or is it Metal Slug Tactics? Because they announced that.
No, so they showed the tower defense game on the stream, but Metal Gear's that was a perfect segue because the Metal Slug game that I'm really interested in is Tactics, which is supposed to come out sometime later this year too. So we'll see which one, you know, if I play both or whatever. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah, good direct from Nintendo. Also, like, coming after, we were just, like, dying from so much stuff from Summer Game Fest. So, good time. Good time to play some games, folks. Let us know what you're playing or what you're excited for. podcast@engadget.com. We had a couple news bits I just want to mention briefly. We had talked about Ilya Sutskever, the former chief scientist of OpenAI, who left that company a couple weeks ago. He's launched a new AI company called Safe Superintelligence Inc., or SSI. That's all we know. He says he's not working on like stuff sort of like OpenAI is. Like, he's going straight to super intelligence and he wants to build it safely. It sounds like a lot of talk and not much details about this thing yet. Do you have any thoughts on this, Sam? Because I don't have great feelings when people talk about super intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, there's this whole section that like of the internet that's like very wants to talk about like artificial general intelligence as like a thing that will be here very soon. And so the idea of like, hey, someone's going to focus on the safety. And if you actually go, there's not a ton of details on it, but if you go to the Safe Superintelligence website, it's actually pretty funny because all they do is like, our mission is to make safe superintelligence. The name of the company is Safe Superintelligence SSI. That's all we care about. That's all we want to work on. And so it's like, they are very focused on this, especially the safety part of AI. And so I appreciate that kind of directive. But like you said, there's, you know, it's so early that it, you know, there's really not much to talk about in terms of like actual deliverables just yet.
I think even like John Carmack, like when he left Meta and very loudly was like, I cannot work with like your weird corporate rules and stuff. He said he was going to go work on AGI. Like, it is a thing smart people are focused on. I just feel like it feels like the time where the tech industry gets a little too religious about a thing that may never ultimately happen. I've been reading about the singularity from Ray Kurzweil since the 90s, and Michio Kaku was talking about it too. It's a thing they've imagined, like where our machines get super intelligent and then we won't be able to control them. I don't know if we'll actually get there, and I don't know if these companies actually building safety measures are going to be helpful at all. Like, that's what OpenAI was supposed to be. That's why Elon Musk and Sam Altman and a lot of folks like put that company together as a nonprofit. And it ended up being just a thing, raising tons of money to make a lot of money selling AI. Like, I feel like it's a lie they're telling themselves. But yeah, I don't know. It's weird. We were even talking about this. We didn't even cover the story in Gadget because there's like no detail here. He's doing a thing called Safe Superintelligence, and we don't know what that thing actually is. So to me, that is like a nothing burger, at least for something we'd write about. Something I do want to talk about and kind of shows like the immediate dangers of AI is Perplexity. And Wired just put up a piece called Perplexity is a Bullshit Machine. If you've not heard of Perplexity, it is sort of like an AI search engine type of thing where you'd put in queries and it will just like answer them. The CEO calls it an answer engine. But what it really seems like what's happening is like it's using different AI engines to basically answer your questions, but also it's sort of scraping. It is both scraping the internet and scraping websites and text and then sending that to the AI engines and then sending a response to you. And Forbes had reported that they were basically just like straight up copying their reports. Like, if you asked a question about an article, like, it will just repeat the Forbes article at you with very little attribution or unclear attribution. So people have been mad at this company for a while. I think somebody, I don't know if it was Forbes, but they had said like Perplexity is working on a licensing deal after they started stealing their
and,
stuff.
And, you know, yeah. They have made some small changes to like call out attribution a little bit better or make it more prominent, or better yet, like, you know, cite their sources and link back to, you know, where they're getting this info from. This all seems like a very much like a company that is, they did a thing without thinking about the consequences of the thing that they made. And now they're trying to like fix all the problems with the thing that they made. And it's like, I don't know, maybe you should have thought about that a little bit harder before you opened it up to like, you know, just users out there.
It's sort of like the thing tech companies do. Like, people, you may not have noticed like what happened, like how Uber and how Lyft and a lot of these companies like rose to power, but a lot of it was just by saying, hey, we're going to deploy this thing which is using tech. Oh, you have local laws about how people handle taxis or things like that, or shared transportation. We're going to ignore those entirely and just do our thing.
It's the mentality of like, we're going to disrupt stuff by breaking things and fixing it later.
Yeah. Or if you've been to a city recently and you see scores and scores of electric scooters just littering the streets, it's because these companies have deployed the stuff and didn't think about, where do you put it? How do you keep it out of the way? Like, how do you actually maintain a decent public space, even though you're putting junk out there? And these companies just didn't care. So it left it up to cities to kind of do a lot of that stuff. So what Wired found, and this report is really interesting, is that Perplexity is straight up, they have like secret, Wired has already blocked Perplexity's like search crawlers. And then apparently this company has other secret search crawlers that are out there that are ignoring the robots.txt file, which in a website tells the search engine, hey, crawl me or don't crawl me, or you don't have access to certain things. This is just bypassing what publishers are actually saying these companies should have access to. So this company sucks. And this is like, to me, the best example of just like AI hubris of just like, I can build this thing. Look at all these tools. The web is right there. It's open. I can just grab this text and deliver something to you and raise a lot of money while doing it too. Right. Like, I don't know how much of this seems like a legitimate business personally. Any thoughts, Sam? Any thoughts beyond that?
No, I mean, you kind of hit it on the head. It's like they're priming themselves up to be the example of what not to do in terms of using AI responsibly. And so I guess we'll see how that fallout ends up.
All right. Let's move on to one listener question we got from Mark Dell, who is now watching our live stream. So thank you for being a loyal listener and watcher, Mark. But he said that recently he got Google Fiber at his apartment. He formerly had 30 megabits up and down. He went all in on Google Fiber and got the 8 gigabit plan and just like sucked it down, basically like having that full access. But he realized he's lucky to get 1.4 gigs speeds over Wi-Fi, 2.5 gigs over Ethernet. That's kind of the limit of most network cards. And now Google is also considering 20 gig fiber. He's wondering, is there any practical use for such fast internet for a residence? And you know what? No, not right now. But you know what's also great? Having more internet than you know what to do with and being ready for whatever's happening 10 years from now. If you're streaming games, if you're doing stuff, I have a gigabit up and down plan with AT&T fiber. It's incredible. Like, I was talking about like getting a ton of Steam games, like downloading 3 Steam games at once. That stuff comes in a couple minutes. Like, just sucks data down. Maybe, Mark, you don't want to pay for the full 8 gig plan if you're not going to use it. Do they have a 4 gig plan? Do they have a 2 gig plan or something? Yeah, you need all the hardware to support it. And Wi-Fi 7 is coming. It's going to support faster hardware or faster speeds. Ethernet is always becoming a faster thing. But I think at best, I see 2.5 gigabit cards in most systems. I guess you could get 10 in some.
You can get 10 if you look for it. Obviously, it's a lot easier to, like, you know, if you have a desktop and you can get your own network card and all that, like that. The one thing that is like sort of like an overlooked benefit is that, you know, let's say you have eight gig plan and you can only get 2.5 gigs, you know, to a specific laptop or PC or whatever. The one thing about having a huge bandwidth pipeline like that is that if you have a lot of people in your house, you know, you can send multiple people can be sucking down 2.5 gigs. Without impacting what other people are doing. And this is like one of the classic issues of, like, you know, if you have bad internet and someone is watching Netflix and then someone else decides to watch, you know, Max, or, you know, they're downloading a game from Steam, then you can start impacting what other people are doing, and their stream is going to start buffering or stuttering or something like that. And so that's kind of the nice thing about that. And that's part of the reason why I probably pay for more, you know, bandwidth than I need, so that, like, I just don't have to think about it. Like, I always know that, like, I have way too many devices in my place, and, you know, I want to make sure that they're running smoothly, connected to the internet super fast all the time. And so it's nice to have that kind of, like, bonus overhead. One of the small fringe benefits.
Especially for us, we occasionally have to, like, upload tons of 4K video, you know? So if I have to upload 50 to 100 gigabytes of stuff, like, I want that up quickly. That was a real pain when I was traveling to WWDC in the Microsoft campus to get the stuff from the DJI Osmo Pro up into the cloud. Like, it just took forever. And that really killed my workflow a little bit. So you still need Ethernet sometimes. And if you can get that good internet, go for it. I see Mark Dell in the chat. He says he's already downgraded his Google Fiber. He could do that in the app. So that's super useful. And he got a 10 gig switch. So he has a decent backbone now, too. This is great. This is great.
Yeah. And that's one of the things you got to like think about, too. It's like, you know, I have a new bandwidth, and that's great. And, let's say you get your router from whatever ISP you're using, or you know, you're getting your modem from whatever ISP, then you have to, like, make sure your router can handle all that. And that's, you know, where DaVinci was talking about, like, hey, Wi-Fi 7 is coming and, you know, more devices. And there are a handful of, like, smartphones on the market today that do support Wi-Fi 7, but obviously you're not going to get Wi-Fi 7 speeds if your router doesn't support it. And so, you know, you got to, like, you know, think holistically about, like, how you upgrade the, you know, the devices that you're using.
You know what's funny is that I have the Surface Pro here. I think it has Wi-Fi 6E. And I noticed, like, okay, I'm just going to plug into Ethernet to, like, suck down these Steam games faster. I have gigabit. I think it's a gigabit, like, Ethernet connection over here. And I was still getting faster speeds over my Wi-Fi. Like, the Wi-Fi was coming in faster, even though it's going through, like, a repeater that's in my basement here that's going hitting the router. Mm-hmm. The Wi-Fi still came in faster. So we are at a weird place where, like, yeah, if you want raw speed, sometimes Wi-Fi will be better. If you want, like, stable connections, like, that's where you plug into Ethernet. So that's what I have on my desktop.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we, you know, if you want to get into, like, the really nitty-gritty stuff, like, there's some interesting things that, like, Netgear and some of the other router makers are doing with Wi-Fi 7, where they're doing, like, multiple channel aggregation. And so you can really pump up those speeds over Wi-Fi. And it's, like, for someone who remembers when Wi-Fi was just, like, very unreliable and spotty, it's like, oh, this is so nice to not have to think about it. And so, you know, a lot of these new Wi-Fi 7 routers are really expensive. But, like, hey, when the prices come down, I think you just appreciate it from, like, not having to, like, constantly babysit your Wi-Fi like that. It's just, you know, really nice to have.
I remember when Wi-Fi, like, barely supported a room. Like, oh, man. Like, I was the first person to put a Wi-Fi router, like, in my dorm room, and I had to, like, hide it from IT and all this stuff. Good stuff. Wi-Fi is good. Anyway, if you have access to fiber, folks, make that switch. It may be a little more than what you're paying for cable. In most cases, from what I've seen, it actually isn't. But the stability of the connection and the ability to not, like, actually share that connection with everybody in your neighborhood is super great. Like, fiber is just such a solid connection to the internet. All right, let's move on to what we're working on. Hey, I'm working on a review. This review of the Surface Pro, and I'm going to try to get some other Copilot Plus systems in soon. Sam, anything from you?
Yeah, obviously, you know, working on the Surface laptop. But I have a review for the MSI Claw, which is MSI's, attempt at making a gaming handheld, which, you know, they went with an Intel chip instead of something from AMD, and... that makes a pretty big difference, turns out. Who knew?
Why would you do that, MSI?
Also, at some point, I'm trying to squeeze in a review for the Keychron Q1HE, which is sort of Keychron's attempt at making a Wooting clone, because it has the HE stands for Hall Effect switches. So, you know, you do get, you know, full analog control, and you get some of that, like, rapid trigger stuff that you see some on some gaming keyboards. I've been really enjoying it so far. I just got to find time to write it up.
Cool. I just picked up one of those Newfi keyboards. I think we've recommended the Newfi or Newfi.
Yep, that was the keyboard that I bought before this one. And it's really great. And they make some really good low profile keyboards, which is actually my preference. Just because, you know, years of typing on laptops, I kind of prefer the, you know, the more chiclet lower profile style keys.
I'm using the low profile Newfi 96, I think. And it just feels good.
Yeah.
Feels so good. Loving it. And got any pop culture picks for us this week, Sam?
Yeah, I'm still watching Star Wars The Acolyte.
So good.
I think we were talking about this in Slack the other day. It's like, I'm enjoying it a lot. I just wish they hadn't done the evil twin trope. Just because it's like, I think that trope is kind of played out.
That's fine. Yeah.
Aside from that, I've been enjoying it. And then I think the Doctor Who season finale is this weekend. As someone who is definitely, I do not classify myself as a Whovian, that's, you know, more of my wife's thing. The transition for this season, because now Disney's kind of running it, the production quality is way, way up, and, like, things just kind of look good, which is, like, old seasons of Doctor Who kind of looks janky.
It looks so bad.
it's rough. But the thing is that, like, the show is, like, kind of, it's been very hit or miss. I think, like, the first episode was good, and then, like, the middle episodes were just, like, they kind of lost the whole idea. And then for the season finale, it finally, things That seems like they're Doctor getting Who. Back to like core yeah. Doctor Who, which I enjoy more. But yeah. You know, as someone who is not as invested into the franchise as some other people are, I'm definitely not the target audience.
That's kind of why I'm like, I've never like fully gone into it. Like, there's some stuff, the Matt Smith season, the first one, like that was good. But the writing in Doctor Who always seems like really hit or miss, even when like they have a really talented person in charge. So,
and there's two episodes. I think the guy who plays the doctor had some commitment on another film or something. And so there's two episodes where the doctor is just not in Doctor Who, and that's just kind of a weird situation.
Well, there are a lot of side characters. I guess I could see that happening. Yeah, shout out to Doctor Who. That's one thing I keep like thinking, like, I need to watch that because I do like the new Doctor. I've seen him and it was Sex Education.
Oh yeah, he's great. Great
show. That's on Netflix. And then it like evaporates from my mind because literally anything else in my life happens, I'm like, I forget about Doctor Who. So glad you're digging it, Sam, even if it's kind of messy. One thing I want to shout out is a show I think you will like and a lot of people should be watching. Not enough people are watching Evil, which was a show on CBS by the Kings, the people who did The Good Wife and The Good Fight. It is straight up X-Files.
It's awesome. I watched the first season of that. And then there was like a long hiatus. It was either after season one or season two. And then I keep meaning to go back to it. But yes, that show is awesome.
I'm shouting it out now because season four is on Paramount Plus, which I've been going through. Excellent stuff. Like, it's pretty much like when the X-Files had hit its run and knew the characters and knew the tone and could be a little playful with things. The show is about a trio of people who are out to investigate miracles, basically, but they're it's led by a priest played by name is escaping me right now, but he was Luke Cage.
Mike Coulter,
yes. And there's also a tech guy who's a total like skeptic, played by Asif Manvi, and a therapist who is just like looking at the human psychological side of things. It is X-Files, but it's also like these folks are basically working for the Catholic Church to do this too. But it's not like a preachy religious show. It's using religious iconography to explore weird supernatural stuff. I think it has a lot of fun with that. The first three seasons are on Netflix now. So it used to be hard for people to see it. So if you wanted to see the show, if you've heard me talk about it before, go to Netflix. Just watch Evil. If you liked The X-Files, if you liked Buffy, if you liked a lot of those old shows where there was basically a mystery of the week, there was a team of folks who would like have to deal with those. It's funny. It's cool. It's super smart. I love the show. It's like one of the things I just sit down and love watching.
Yeah. I'll also say Michael Emerson. He plays like Ben from Lost. He is such a good bad guy. And I don't want to ruin the like reveal of like who his character really is.
Yeah.
But he's so well cast and well equipped to play the role that he's doing in that. I really think the performances in that show really make it just like, even if it is like, you know, you're looking at a standard Monster of the Week episode, like they do such a good job of like really getting you invested into it.
They have a lot of fun. And yeah, poor Michael Emerson. I remember during Lost, he talked about like being on the subway and nobody wanted to sit near him or stand next to him because they all saw him as this like evil man from TV. Mm-hmm. So he's just a little typecast there, but now
he's doing it again, so I guess it worked out for him.
It worked out for him. I mean, sort of like what Giancarlo Esposito ended up doing is just like he's a villain everywhere, apparently, like doing the same thing everywhere, and he hasn't worn it out like Giancarlo Esposito has. So anyway, go watch Evil. It's on Netflix. The new season is on Paramount Plus. That's it for this week, folks. Our theme music is by game composer Dill North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Element. You can find me online at Devendra on Twitter, Blue Sky, Mastodon. I also talk about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com. Where can we find you, Sam?
You can find me on Twitter/X at Sam Rutherford.
Email us at podcastengadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That's it, folks. We're out.